This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Hour number two of Bob, Groz, and Tom. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll bring you up to speed on everything you may have missed if you didn't get us at the opening of the show. Halftime show coming your way. Meanwhile, get a chance to talk some more college hoops as the tournament is getting set to get underway. Bob Valvano, college basketball analyst, joining us now. Bob, how are you, sir?
I'm well. Nice to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. We appreciate it. And obviously, everybody gets very excited this time of year. You got the conference tournaments done. The seeding is out there. Give me your thoughts on every year. What I love is we all anxiously await the unveiling of the brackets and who's going to be playing where and what seed are they. And every year there's a massive injustice. And how could the committee have done this? And why would they put this team here? And how did this team not make it? Give me your biggest upsets in terms of teams that didn't make it, or just the biggest head-scratching move in terms of where they were placed?
Well, there's a couple that jump out at me. I mean, I grew up in New York, and if you grew up in New York, the college team, you know, for a city that's filled with mid-majors, there was one high major, and that was St. John's. And I've known Chris Mullin for a long time, so on a personal level, I'm very happy for him. But I'll be honest, that was a stretch for me. I mean, they were somewhere in the the low 70s in both the KenPom and the net. There were, by my count, four Big East teams ahead of them in the net ratings that didn't go. And they got a bid. And while their record is nice, 21-12, and there's some good wins, that was a bit of a stretch. And Arizona State was a bit of a stretch for me also. No disrespect. I know I'm talking in Pac-12 country, but, I mean, that league was pretty dreadful this year, to be honest with you. And they got three teams in now, and I think Arizona State was a little bit of a stretch also. But, I mean, there wasn't really like we've seen other years where people were ready to storm the Capitol. You know, it wasn't anything like that. but I just thought those were a little bit surprising to me, those two.
What about the number one seeds? Did they all cotton as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, I think they got them perfect. I really do. I think at Tennessee won the SEC tournament. They might have slipped in as the last number one, but as they didn't. I'll admit there's some of a bias, only in the sense that I've seen more ACC teams than anybody else. We do the ACC tournament, as you might know, from the doubleheader Wednesday night in the second round all the way through the finals. So that's two second-round games, all the quarterfinal games, with the two semifinals and the finals. So I've seen a lot of them. But those teams are really good. I mean, they are – Virginia played surprisingly – average basketball in the ACC tournament. I was really surprised at that. We saw them play four halves, and three of them were pedestrian, but Carolina looked great, Duke looked great, and I had Virginia three times during the regular season, and they looked spectacular. So they were all very, very good. I think Gonzaga earned the last number one seed. Certainly that was a surprising result in the final, but it wasn't like they lost to a bunch of bums. I mean, St. Mary's is a nice team, and you can't write off the rest of their season. So I think they got it right. I think that's one of the reasons there wasn't so much yelling and screaming, is because I think most people think they got it right at the top. And so if you're mad about, you know, a team getting in as the last at large as the 68th team, I mean, those teams are not going to win the tournament anyway, in all likelihood. So it just doesn't seem like there was much outrage this year.
You mentioned Gonzaga, Bobby, and also the Pac-12 being down. I'm just curious, Gonzaga's level of competition, they beat Duke, they lost to Tennessee, and I think North Carolina, but then they romped through their conference. How do you view their competition as opposed to some of these other number one seeds?
I'm fighting bronchitis, so I hope you'll indulge my rudeness on the phone here. I apologize, but trying not to sound too much like Marv Albert here. I'll be honest with you. I think if it were me, and I think Carolina is the people that other folks were talking about being moved off the one line if Tennessee had won, but I would have moved Gonzaga. I would have made it the three ACC teams in Tennessee just for the reason you said. I mean, Mark Few is a brilliant coach. They are not, and in any way, shape, or form, a mid-major. They are a high major. They could very well win this tournament. But the fact of the matter is, that's the disadvantage to being in a league like they're in. I think for them to have had the number one seed with everything else that transpired, absolutely locked up with no calls, no more calls. We have a winner. They had to win the regular season and the tournament. They didn't win the tournament. So I think they left the door open. Maybe you think that's a little harsh, but I think that's the disadvantage that you play from when you're not in a high major league. But, you know, the chips fell their way. The other people that could have taken their spot all went by the wayside. The one argument that Jay Williams makes and Seth Greenberg is about Michigan State. I mean, the Big Ten is regarded as a pretty strong league. Michigan State won the regular season, won the tournament, and they got a two seed. So maybe they had a little bit of a gripe too. But, you know, the problem for me is I saw them early and when Louisville beat them, and they looked pretty ordinary, to be honest with you. And I know, and I saw them one time after that, and they were good, but they weren't great. So by the eyeball test, they just, I mean, Carolina wowed me. Duke wowed me. Virginia during the regular year wowed me. You know, and Gonzaga was, like you said, those margins are difficult to write off. The numbers are wowing. So I think they were okay. But if you're going to ask me, does their league factor into, you know, when they get seated and how they get seated, I think it does. And I don't think it's unfair. That's, you know, they can't just snap their fingers and join a high major conference, but that's the league they're in. There's going to be a lot of games in there that aren't going to resonate very much with a lot of people.
Bob, how big of a gap do you think exists, if any at all, between the talent levels when you talk about Duke and North Carolina and Virginia and Gonzaga? Do you look at, all right, these are 1A, and then there's a pretty good gap between the next tier? How do you size up just the dominant teams versus the teams you think are really good?
Well, you know, it's funny you say, because we were talking about it on the selection show last night. I think there is a very fine separation at the top of the bracket and at the bottom of the bracket. I think that, you know, you could have gone 10 different ways to put the last six at-large teams in, and you couldn't really have said you were wrong. It would have just been, what flavor do you want to use? It's the same thing at the top. I don't think there's much separation between Carolina and Tennessee and Kentucky and Duke and Virginia and Gonzaga and Michigan State and, you know, those seven, really. I think those teams are kind of on their own. Then after that, it's not like a huge drop off, but it's significant. It's palpable. I mean, you know, I'm usually one of those guys that says, you want to make me a bet, take a team and give me the field. I don't care. I'll give you any team and I'll take the field, because it's very, very hard in a one-off situation. And I realize you're not getting taken one team, but this year, all those teams meet the KenPom requirement. You know, since 2002, when he started doing his offensive adjusted numbers and defensive adjusted numbers, you actually have to tweak this a little bit. You have to be careful. The stat is that there's only one team that won the national championship that wasn't in both the top 20 offensively and defensively. But the reason that's a little misleading is some of those teams played their way in to those categories by what they did in the NCAA tournament. So I went back and looked at it, the team's rankings before the NCAA tournament started. And that right now, of those 17 years, there's only 2 years where a team that won the championship wasn't in the top 30 in both offense and defense, with at least one of those in the top 15. So, and if you look at that this year, it's that same cast of characters I just read you that's on that list, is with a couple of other surprises, like believe it or not, Virginia Tech's numbers are in there. Houston meets that criteria. But there's only nine, and really, at the top of those nine, you know, the people I mentioned, yeah, to answer your question, there's a palpable difference. Now, in fairness, I mean, there's one Zion Williamson. I mean, people can get as angry as they want to, that too much Zion, it's all hype, it's all this. But the kid not only lived up to the hype, he exceeded the hype. And it was very, very difficult not to walk out of the ACC tournament and just jump on the accolade bandwagon, because he is a kid that has handled all this crazy attention fantastically. He absolutely loves to play. And if you cannot get right behind that, and I don't know why you're watching, I mean, the kid is just like a big 12-year-old. He just loves to play, and his physical skill set is scary. To see a kid that big be that fast, have the feather touch that he has, and you know what else, guys? He's really smart. He's a really smart player. You watch, you know, they used to say about Wayne Gretzky, what made him great is other guys were going where the puck was. He was going where the puck was going to be. That's how Zion is. I mean, I think Duke got probably 90% of the 50-50 balls in the first half against North Carolina, because he went to where the ball was going to be before anybody on the court even moved. And then once he gets there, he's so quick and strong, he's going to get it. So I mean, it's not fair. Nobody has a Zion. Nobody even in the ACC has a Zion. But, you know, you look at the rest of that team, the Barretts, the Trey Jones, and then you look at Carolina. Cam Johnson is a spectacularly good player. Luke May is had a fantastic year. He's an old school college guy who's just come on and put in, he's one of the, I think he's only two Division I players in the country to have a double-double in a major conference. So yeah, they have more. You know, Jay Billis said it best. He said there's a team like, for example, Florida State. Florida State has a lot of good players, a lot. Leonard Hamilton plays 10 guys. He's got good players. Doesn't really have the great players. The great players are at Carolina and Duke, and some might argue Virginia has one or two of them. I think Ty Jerome can be a great player. I think he's going to be a pro, DeAndre Hunter. So I think that's the difference. They have more of the great players, and some of them, so they got a transcendent player and a guy like Zion who is every bit as good as the hype.
Bob, when you look for teams that are going to make a surprise run, what are the biggest factors you look at? Is it senior backcourt? Is it good defense, good offense, three-point shooting? Do you have any criteria you use to try and pick a team that may get a few wins in this tournament?
Yeah, I like three things. I like a team, and you mentioned two of them. I like a team that has some upper-class leadership, experience. If they're going to be a surprise team, they're not going to have one-and-done guys, so they wouldn't be a surprise. So then what you want is experience. If you can't have great young talent, then you want great experience. And so I think that's the first thing. The second thing is, whether you like it or I like it or you love it or you hate it, the game is what it is now. And like baseball is all, you know, about the three true outcomes. Basketball is about shooting the basketball, and especially shooting the three. And if you can't shoot threes, you are going to have a hard time winning six games in a row. So I look for a team that can really shoot it. And I think it helps if they were there before. You know, I think if you've got guys back and they were there before, like Florida State made an elite run, eight run last year. Kansas State made an elite eight run last year. Those are teams not many people are talking about. I've seen both of them. Florida State, as I said, is really, really good. I mean, they're very dangerous. They took Virginia completely out of their game. They don't shoot it great. That's the only thing. But they can shoot it well enough. There are some other teams that, I mean, Texas Tech, if they can shoot, they defend as well as anybody in the country. And if they can get their shooters going, they are going to be a hard out. Don't be fooled by one tough game in their conference tournament. They had a bad night. You know, you can say, well, that could happen in the NCAA tournament too. Sure, it can. But they made a run last year, and I think they're primed to make one this year. So that'd be a team I'd keep an eye on. But those, I look for experience, and I look for teams that are able to shoot the basketball. I think if they can do those two things, I think, you know, yeah, you got to play defense. Nobody can be awful on one side of the basketball and make much of a run. But if you can't shoot it in today's game, you're going to have a hard time winning six games or even four games in a row to get to the Final Four.
When we talk about Washington out here, we talk about defense, we talk about the zone specifically. Do you think that because that's not as common as it once was, that's a tough matchup, Washington, for basically anybody in this tournament?
Well, that's it. You want another dark horse team? His mentor. I mean, for the same reason, Syracuse. Yes, I absolutely agree. Because, you know, the problem is that people who don't watch Washington or watch Syracuse say, oh, they're playing a 2-3 zone, and they think it's like the 2-3 zone in their men's league. You know, there's been a bunch of chubby guys standing there with their hands up waiting for the team to shoot it. And then, of course, they play it that way. I mean, I haven't seen Washington's stats, but my guess is they're similar to Syracuse because that's who he trained under. If you did not know how either of them played, when you looked at their stat sheet, you know, so you parachuted in from another planet and they handed you a stat sheet, you look at it and say, oh, the Syracuse team must be a team that presses because look at all these steals. I mean, they get eight steals a game. And, you know, they don't give up any threes. That was the other stupid stereotype. Well, if you play zone, you're going to be susceptible to the three. They're really not. They, you know, it's more like a 2-2-1 where the wings are extremely wide. They're very long. If you throw it to the corner, they trap you. So most teams don't dare throw it there. So you've already eliminated about 10 feet of the offensive part of the court because they don't want to go into the corner. So they all play wing to wing. They play a lot of east-west, but the only place eventually they get it is the high post, which is a great place to get it against any zone, but you have to make an awful lot of twos from there because they're not going to give you a lot of threes, and there's a lot of times you're going to try and make that pass, and they're going to steal it. And when they do, they get out and run, and they get easy baskets. I mean, they played, you know, again, I'm sorry to talk so much about Syracuse, but I'll be candid with you, I haven't seen much of Washington, but Syracuse played without Ty Battle, who scored 30 points in their win against Duke, and they put up a heck of a fight in the ACC tournament But for that reason, and keep in mind, those are teams that have seen that defense because they've played against them in the league. If you've not seen it, I mean, it takes you like a half just to get familiar with it. So, yeah, I mean, Washington does not have a great seed. As I said, the Pac-12 did not get a lot of respect this year. But when you have to face that zone, and especially if it's the second game of the two and you've had like a day to prepare for it, I mean, you could get a team that has turnover after turnover. And as Hubie Brown likes to say, all things equal in big games, the team that wins is the team that makes more easy baskets. So if they get steals out of that zone, they could be dangerous.
Last one, Bob. Everyone seems to think that Duke is the favorite. I imagine we're at the game where Louisville had a 23-point lead with 10 minutes to go against Duke. What did Louisville do in that game, and was that a blueprint to try and beat the Blue Devils?
You know, very strange. We forget when you see Zion dominate like he did. He's still a kid, and I think that was their maturity day. And I think Mike Krzyzewski was willing to write that game off. He really was. I don't know how closely you followed it, but there was a timeout late in the game. They came to the bench, and he didn't talk to them. And they were all looking at each other like, what are you doing? And he said, I don't coach losers. Because he thought they had stopped trying. They weren't playing very hard. So I think he really thought they were going to lose, and he was going to use that as his lesson game. Okay, fellas, see, you think you're hot stuff. If you don't come out and play hard, this is what happens. And instead, they took it to heart and went out and played their butts off for the last 8 minutes and erased the 23-point lead. Now, Louisville helped them. They absolutely lost their minds in the last 4 minutes and played awfully, but it's still a credit to the Duke kids. So I don't think it was a blueprint as much as it was they just weren't playing that hard. Now, if there is a blueprint, it's this. They don't shoot it well. They just got through saying, I love teams that shoot it to win a national championship. But the difference is they don't let you shoot it. Duke gives up 29% behind the three-point line, so they might shoot, you know, 4 of 19, but there's a chance, a really good chance, you're going to shoot like 2 of 24. I mean, they do that to everybody. And on top of it, if they miss, they go get it. I mean, Zion can turn those misses into second-chance points. Plus, when Ty Jones plays on-ball defense like he does, and then you've got Zion guarding the wing, you talk about getting steals and line ball turnovers for easy baskets. I mean, they must have gotten 15 or 16 points just off that in the semifinal and the finals. That's a big deal in postseason play. You give me 8 free points a game, I'm going to win a lot of games. So that's the difference with them. If they make threes, it's kind of like icing on the cake. But, you know, if they make threes, they're almost unbeatable. But they're not going to make them very often. They're really not a good shooting team. But, boy, they defend, and they will get loose balls, and they're great in transition, and they learned their lesson about playing hard in that Louisville game. So I think they're going to come out and play hard. And that's why I like them as the favorite. I mean, I think they have a plan B and a plan C and even a plan D to beat you, and not a lot of other teams in the country have that. They're going to have to, you know, roll the dice and come up 7, you know, 4 nights in a row. You can win with a 7, maybe a 5, you know, a 10. They don't have to roll 7s to win, and it's nice when you got that luxury.
He is Bob Valvano, our guest here, talking college basketball. Bob, we really appreciate you spending a few minutes with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bob.
It's my pleasure. Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go, Bob Valvano of Louisville. He is where he's at?
Louisville, yeah.
He's been their color guy.
College basketball analyst, former co-worker of yours.
That's right. We spent many an overnight together back in the late
2000s. Many an overnight.
Yes, exactly.
In the wee hours of the morning talking
sports. It was basically just us. When you're on ESPN radio and you're on overnight.
What was the shift? Like 11 to 6 or something like that?
The shift itself.
8-hour shift of radio?
It was basically 9 to 5 overnight.
You know, I went on that show a few times. I wonder if that's when you were there.
Maybe. I don't know if you
may have already been here.
It's funny. You book so many guests, especially for that show.
Oh, I'm sure.
You tape all your guests, say 4 or 5 before the show.
Right.
And you air them. And then after 3 years of doing it, you've done thousands. Maybe I did call you.
I believe it.
I know I had Art Teal on once. To talk,
was he probably a tough get?
I don't think so. But I think when we were talking about the Sonics leaving,
oh,
you know, you have your list of guys who are in Seattle. You say, I'll just call one of them.
Right.
That's who it was.
Yeah, but that was the thing about I was wondering about that game because I vaguely remember watching it. Louisville, 23-point lead with 9 minutes to go against Duke.
Right.
Krzyzewski, I'd forgotten that until he mentioned it. And then all of a sudden they explode.
You know, sometimes we talk about how college basketball teams need a loss, right? Because they need to be able to learn from it. And in that case, it's like they learned it just from a half.
Yep.
Right? And then they came right back. So good for them. I'm picking them to win the whole thing. I think they're on
Duke.
Yeah, I am.
He looked pretty good in that game against Carolina. And he's right. Everybody's been saying it about Zion Williamson. He's a man among boys.
Right.
And he seems to have that IQ out there, that basketball IQ. And
you see the pass he made the other day from about half court? He took the ball. He's lefty. He threw it like it was a slider, like a Randy Johnson slider.
Bounce pass. Had some bite
in.
To it.
Yeah, bounce pass in. The guy takes it for a layup. I mean, it was just unbelievable. He's right. No other team has that player in this tournament.
And they've got players outside of him that they can lean on. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to go with Duke in this whole thing. We'll talk more college hoops, obviously, as the tournament gets underway. Coming up, potential addition to the Seahawks is in town. We'll talk about that. Also, Russell Wilson making his position clear. It's the Halftime Show coming your way next with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over.
Presented by VenueKings.com.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Bob Gross and Tom.
It is the Halftime Show with Bob Gross and Tom. We do it at this time every single day for those of you unable to join us at the beginning of the show. Biggest stories of the day that we covered and some of the stories we didn't get a chance to cover. Get to that in a moment. You can start texting in any questions you've got on any topic in your mind right now. 710-710 is the Coors Light text line. Have an opinion already coming up in 15 minutes, so you can start texting right now. Meanwhile, one of the stories we didn't get to is that according to our buddy Brady Henderson of ESPN.com, Seahawks will host receiver Jordy Nelson on a free agent visit tomorrow.
What did I see? 6 teams looking at him?
Yeah, and his other teams interested include the Patriots, Chiefs, Titans, and Raiders listed here. So this is a guy who was considered to have a bit of a down year last year. Looking at his numbers, 63 catches, 739 yards, 3 touchdowns in 15 games. That would have put him second on the Seahawks. He would have led the team in receptions. Would have put him second in terms of yardage, though.
34 years old.
But you always have to have an adjusted number for becoming a Seahawk wide receiver,
yeah.
Right?
Those numbers just, you would assume would come down. Yeah.
I mean, what was the catch number?
63.
So that's
he would have led the team.
So that's probably about 48 with the Seahawks.
Yeah, if he stays healthy and he's playing every
adjusted
game.
Number.
Yeah, there should be a stat for that, right?
Yeah, now Oakland was not a good team, and obviously Carr was not a great quarterback last year. And
right, but they throw the ball.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I don't know how I take these numbers. I mean, is he in the prime? No, certainly not.
No.
Can he still add if you're looking at this guy for a year and you get him at a good price? Sure.
Maybe.
Now, if you've got 5 other teams in competition, I don't know. Realistically, are they going to get into a bidding war for Jordy Nelson? I doubt it.
I don't think so.
But is he in the Brandon Marshall?
No, he's better than that.
No,
he's got more in the tank. He's got more in the tank than every one of those. And okay.
Braylon
Edwards.
Coming off a 64-yard catch season, I mean, you would be surprised if he didn't make the team.
Yes, he's far ahead of everybody you just listed there.
Okay, I hope so.
And Braylon Edwards, and I'm trying to think of any other veteran receiver.
Antonio Bryant came here at one point.
Yeah, him too.
Yeah. I feel like there was somebody else in between. But
there probably was, and I can't remember who else, veteran receivers who were a big deal
brought
at
in
one point.
In training camp. I mean, Marshall made the team, played a few games. So did it. Sort of Braylon Edwards. Braylon Edwards might have played about 8 or 9 games when he was here.
Yeah, Jordy Nelson would be
better than all of them.
You would expect him to be.
Now, what would his role be? Because we know Baldwin slot. Lockett can do a lot of different things, but he can be a burner.
He'd be your third receiver.
Yep.
Yeah. The Jermaine Kearse type role.
Yeah. Yeah.
Need that.
Why don't you
like
David Moore?
Unless they like their youth.
How come you don't like David Moore?
I feel like David Moore could be pushed a little.
Who would you rather have? Would you rather have Kearse back or Jordy Nelson? Assuming they're the same price.
Same price?
Yeah, and I've got no idea what either would command, but let's just pretend they're both going to get, I don't know, what, $4 million a year, $5 million a year.
Same price, same health?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'd take Nelson.
I'd probably go for Kearse.
Would you?
Yeah.
I mean, Nelson's older, not by a ton. Maybe 3 or 4 years. Yeah. I think I'd go with Nelson.
Neither are a long-term commitment.
No.
So I think I'd lean toward Nelson if they're both healthy.
I mean, Kirst does have the familiarity with Russell, though. That matters.
It does. Matters to Russell. Keep him from going to New York.
Nelson in his prime, though. Whew.
Yeah.
Him and Aaron Rodgers.
Different guy.
As good a combination as there was.
All right. There you go. We didn't get a chance to hit on that coming into the show. So we'll see what happens with Jordy Nelson. Then I swear I heard Clayton say this morning that Houston was coming in or had come in for a visit. But we couldn't find any confirmation of that anywhere.
I didn't hear John say it. Would have said something to me, I think, when we were crosstalking.
Ashley, did he say anything about Houston coming in for a visit? I swear I heard him say that this morning.
I don't recall anything.
Okay.
Your mind playing tricks on you there?
No. He said something.
I mean, I believe you.
Yeah.
I promise believe
you,
if you
went back
mentioned.
Through the tapes, he said,
okay.
Whether it happened or is going to happen, we'll see. But, yeah. Meanwhile, story number two. We opened up talking about the Huskies. In case you just tuned in, you were out of town, off the grid, as some like to say. The Huskies are a 9 seed. The selection committee made them a 9 seed after they lose to Oregon in the Pac-12 tournament. And we spent a fair amount of time, I guess, lamenting the lack of enthusiasm, or Tom did anyway.
Yeah.
Now, Brock Hewitt has been texting us, countering your idea that there's a lack of enthusiasm from UW fans out there.
Yeah, Brock's too deep in the weeds here, I think.
You're saying he doesn't have the ability to be objective.
I don't know, man. Look, how do you gauge enthusiasm? It's a tough thing to do. But when we watch Seahawk games, we're talking Seahawks, whatever it is. We're on Twitter. We're engaging with our audience. We take texts and phone calls and all that. You can tell when something's hot. You just can. We have enough experience with this where I think we can gauge it in a ballpark sort of way. I don't feel any of that with the Huskies. I didn't feel it on Saturday night. I didn't feel it for their last couple of games. I didn't get any sense of engagement with any of their fans. And here they are. They're the regular season champs. I think they're still a dangerous team in this tournament. They got the player of the year in the Pac-12. It's their first time.
Coach of the year in the Pac-12.
Right,
defensive player
we'll
of the
see,
year
we'll
in the
see Pac-12. If, we'll see if it builds. I'm not so sure I agree with you entirely. But
well, we'll see during the game, I guess.
We'll see during the week. I mean, if there's a little more excitement as it gets closer. I mean, it's coming up. They don't play till Friday.
Friday, right. Yeah.
So, I mean, that may have something to do with it. We'll see. But
I tend to agree with Tom doing.
I think Saturday took a lot of... Excuse me, Bob. I thought Saturday took a lot of wind out of their sails. To really play that poorly against Oregon.
Right.
5-4 in their last 9 games.
I would expect more outrage, though, over that.
Getting blown out?
Oh, my God. Like, what are we doing? We're the best team in the conference. Here comes Oregon wiping the floor with us. What are we doing? What's going on? It was just apathy. It was,
Because I think, you know, often the play of your team will inspire the fan base. And I think you could point to the wins. We talked about it. They hadn't had a win you'd call really good, or whether you felt really good about it since, what, the 23rd of February, maybe, against Colorado, 9-point win. They haven't been that inspiring even in victory. I mean, maybe fans have gone, they're squeaking by a subpar conference full of teams. It doesn't inspire me to believe that they're going to be great, or they're going to win, or maybe they're, you know, it kills some level of confidence. I don't know.
Just the fact that you made the tournament. I mean, think it's 64. It's a unique event, I understand. But there are 68 teams in this thing. I mean, the fan base. Think, how is Murray State feeling today?
They're pretty excited.
I would think that they're pretty. They have one of the more exciting players in the tournament, but like. If I'm at one of Utah State, the team that Washington is playing, how are their fans? I just don't understand how Husky fans have this exemption from excitement after not having been in this thing for 8 years. It doesn't make any sense.
But you're also talking about a city that's got a football team that's making moves, signing a team, players going elsewhere, where the Seahawks problem. Are king. And that's not true at Utah State. You don't have that. You're not dividing the attention. You're not dividing the passion of a sports fan, I guess, where they're just accustomed to having that level of passion for the basketball team because they don't have a baseball team. They don't have a football team. So
enough fandom for one team in this town?
No, but I think when it's spread out like that, I think it's going to impact the level of enthusiasm or the how big the fan base is. I mean, I think when you've got that many different options, when you've got a town where there's only one, you're the biggest show in town and that's it, or one of two. there's going to be more passion. There's going to be more attention paid to it. People are going to live and die with the results of that team because that's all there is.
I guess, but to me, the idea that Jordy Nelson visiting the Seahawks is more exciting than the Huskies being in the tournament, I think is just ridiculous.
Seattle.
I feel like it was almost an expectancy that they made the tournament because they were so dominant for the majority of their season that it's just like, oh, they made the tournament. Okay, we'll see them play Friday.
So you think if they snuck in like Arizona State or Oregon, it would be more exciting?
Yeah,
that's
quite possible.
If they hadn't made it, a good thing. It would have been outrage.
If they didn't make it, that would have been a big deal. Which, I mean, we should still be excited regardless. This is the first time since 2011 that they have made the tournament. But because they've had so much success, it was like, oh, well...
Foregone conclusion. They're going
to
be there.
Just weird.
It feels like you just backed your way in. Not that they. Yeah, it was. You thought, yeah, they're going to be in there, they just didn't play a very inspired ball for a month now. So
you know, if you were, what would be a good example? If you were Duke or North Carolina, and you backed your way into the tournament, and your fans were kind of like, yeah, you know what? We're going to have other good teams. We've already had a lot of great teams in the past. I could see some apathy there, but. The fact that you haven't made it in so long, we had so many discussions about Lorenzo Romar. Should he stay? Should he go? Should he be out the door? We get Hopkins. He's exciting. We got all these great players, and then just feels like nothing.
Feels like this will be a topic with Brock and Salk tomorrow.
I'm sure Brock will defend it. He'll say, oh, well.
He already did. He sent us a text of the top trending stories at the Seattle Times.
It's fine. He's allowed to feel
that
way.
Yeah, I think there's some buzz.
Two of which were the Huskies.
To me, some buzz isn't enough. That's all.
You want mania.
Yes, mania.
You want dog mania is what he's demanding. All right, coming up, we answer your questions. Any topic or subject is fair. Just text in your question to 710-710, the Coors Light text line. Have an opinion already. It's coming your way next with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Have an Opinion Already on the Bob Gross and Tom Show. Three loudmouths, three questions, and one giant tub of hand sanitizer. Right, Bob? Let's get it on.
Let's get it on.
Nope. Try again.
Let's get it on!
Question one.
How do you feel about those people who always insist on showing you the pics on their phone?
You just see what was going on here during the break?
Yeah. I was doing it to Bob a minute ago, too.
Although Bob wouldn't show me pics. He was showing me dog videos.
Yeah.
Which he does every day.
Lightens the mood, though. Makes people happy.
It does. It makes me feel better when you do that.
Yeah. I tweet those out to a select group here.
If it's a picture of your kids on vacation or something, I'm not really interested.
Save it.
Put it on Facebook. I'll skim past it real quick.
Yeah.
I'll assume your life is happy.
Here's little Jimmy standing on a rock.
Ooh.
Show me your pets. I'm in. You want to show me pictures of your dog, your cat, whatever? I'm in.
Speaking of pets, if your pet was a person, which sport would they play?
Little Bruiser was a person.
Man.
Maddie would play softball.
Softball?
Oh, yeah. She catches things in the air all the time.
My dog can't catch anything, but she can run like a bullet.
She'd be a track star.
Probably a track star, yeah.
But too short to hurdle.
Or at the dog track. Too short to hurdle? Yeah. No, she can jump.
No, she'd be a person.
Oh.
So you're not going dog track with the person?
Yeah, I am.
She'd be the lone woman out there running against a pack of dogs.
That's right. Man, she can move. She can fly. That's why I don't take her anywhere. Always on a leash. Next.
Question two.
What about your dog? Your dog would be the manager.
Frank would be the manager?
Yeah.
I don't know what he would do. He's a pretty energetic little dude. He's got a lot of personality.
He'd be like...
Bruiser play football.
Yeah, like Earl Weaver.
You'd be Earl Weaver?
Yeah.
Nah, Earl was a little angry. He'd throw some tantrums.
My little guy'd play football. Not well, though.
Not well?
No.
Is he older, Bruiser?
He's older, yeah. He's 12.
Okay. It's like Thomas Davis.
Yeah, he's a little tank, though.
I just had a good one here. What do you expect from Edwin Encarnacion and Jay Bruce this year? Tell you what, I didn't expect Edwin to even be on the team.
Nobody did.
I didn't expect either of them to be on the team.
Well, Bruce, when they acquired him, you didn't hear any talk about, yeah, they just acquired him to move him. Encarnacion, that was the belief amongst everybody that covered the team, and the idea is that they just didn't get what they wanted in exchange for him. So
he
yeah.
still may move him as the year goes on.
Certainly, yeah. If he starts producing and he becomes an attractive piece, yeah, that's because he's not part of your future. He's your immediate future.
I think you're expecting results.
Yeah, he'll be. I hope he's fun to watch while he's here. If he's here,
good parrot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you need to have some power hitter in your
life. You need somebody to fill the gap that was left by Nelson Cruz.
Right.
And the assumption is it should be him. Now, maybe between him and Bruce, they fill it. It's not one guy hitting 40. Maybe, you know, he hits 25, Bruce gives you 20. Who knows?
I mean, Seager's going to be out for a while. You'd expect 20 out of him, but. Next.
Question three.
My parrot would be any sport where you chuck something across a large distance. Javelin thrower, probably. Huh. Your parrot can chuck a javelin?
Shot put.
Wow.
Discus.
Shot put?
Yeah.
Let's see. If you had to give up watching NFL, this is probably just for me. If you had to give up watching NFL football or college basketball, which one goes? I guess college basketball, reluctantly.
I'd probably, if it didn't make any difference for work, I'd give up NFL football.
If it didn't make a difference for work, I would give up NFL football.
But it does, so I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be giving up football.
I'd give up football in a heartbeat.
Well, if it wasn't for work.
Yeah, if it wasn't for work. I mean, while the Giants are terrible.
Just your preference.
Yeah.
Just casually. If you didn't cover it, you just, as a sports fan, what do you like better? For me, it's not even close.
I'm watching Indiana games, all of them, regardless of what you say.
I'll watch the Seahawks. I'll watch the NFL. Because that's NFL is a sport where, unlike baseball, unlike basketball, unlike, I'd say, just about any other sport where you know most of the players on every other team, you've got a sense of every other team, you watch. I'll sit down and watch a game that doesn't involve the Seahawks and look forward to a game that doesn't involve the Seahawks throughout the league. You don't really, for me, I certainly don't get it out of college basketball. There are too many garbage teams.
Oh, I definitely do.
Get
I
mean, off.
I love that Tennessee, we were talking about it, that Tennessee-North Carolina game, or Tennessee-Kentucky game.
Kentucky, yeah. By the way, is there a? There's probably other coaches like this, but I love a guy like Bruce Pearl who can go anywhere and win. He revived Tennessee.
Rick Barnes, a guy like that.
Yeah, I guess he's revived him again.
Yep.
I mean, he revived Auburn, and
Texas.
Neither one of those are really programs, what we call blue blood programs. They are in football,
right?
But not so much in basketball. I give him a lot of credit. He won at UW, what was it, Milwaukee? Not UW,
yeah.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
Yeah. A lot of people busted me about this Husky fan thing. I apologize, guys. I just want to see you out there is all.
You're not sorry. Come on.
Well, I don't want to be antagonistic about it. I just want to see enthusiasm for something that we've been praying for a decade.
I'm seeing more enthusiasm than you are. Maybe it's just who you follow on Twitter.
Or the people who follow me.
That's a better point.
But they're showing up on the text, are they?
Yeah, to some extent.
All right.
People saying, what are you worried about? Indiana didn't even make the tournament. Yeah, but I still care about them.
They were close.
Yeah. I'm going to see Steve Martin and Martin Short this summer in Spokane. Any legendary comedians you would love to see live?
Legendary comedians.
I managed to see most of the ones that I wanted to see. Seen Seinfeld, saw Sam Kinison.
I saw Kinison. I never saw Rickles in his prime.
Saw
I'd love
Rickles.
To have seen him in his prime.
Saw Rickles here.
But
saw
he George, was in his prime at that
he
point.
He was still pretty good, though. I saw him many years ago in Vegas, too. Saw George Carlin. He was terrific.
Yeah, all the legendary comedians, for the most part, have passed, feels like. It's a new breed. Becoming legends now. I went to see Chris Porter this past weekend.
Is he a legend?
No, but he should be. It's fantastic.
That's the thing. You don't really have to be a legend in comedy to be great.
No, there are a lot of great comedians out there, and Chris Porter is one of them. He was fantastic. Our buddy Adam Ray is hilarious. Craig Gass is great. I mean, there's a lot of... If you're into stand-up comedy, there's no shortage of great comedians out there.
You know who I thought in his day was great and had one of the all-time best comedy specials? I think it was on HBO and was Dana Carvey in like the mid-90s. Remember that where he was doing like Ross Perot, he was doing
George
O.J.
Bush.
And Clinton and everybody. I thought that was a great one.
I'll tell you, I like Kathleen Madigan. You ever heard her?
Mm-hmm.
She's hilarious.
Never heard of her. I wouldn't know too many of these people.
Though. You know the one guy I never understood? I actually like him as an actor. As a stand-up comedian, never understood it, is Dane Cook. I do not get the attraction to that guy whatsoever.
I don't really either. Is he? You like him as an actor, though? What's he been in?
He was in Mr. Brooks with Kevin Costner. I thought he was good in that. He was in a movie with Steve Carell. He's been in a handful of movies. He's in Waiting, that movie with Ryan Reynolds.
I don't watch movies.
All right. Sorry. Well, then this isn't going to help you then.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to get you to tell me.
I don't think he's a bad actor at all. I don't dislike him, but his comedy never made sense. He never had a punchline. Hmm. I never understood it, but the guy was filling up arenas at one point. So, yeah, now he's, I think, playing places like the Paramount. He's come back down to earth.
That's still a good venue.
Well, but he was doing 16,000. Now he's doing, 2,600 or something. Yeah.
Somebody texting and saying Bruce Pearl's gotten in trouble for violations at each stop. When he got in trouble at Tennessee, it was because he invited a bunch of his players over for a cookout or something.
Oh, no.
Come on, he's not exactly an evil guy.
You can't do that.
This isn't Rick Pitino.
Or John Calipari.
Hookers.
Well, said to give up most of his titles.
Right, exactly.
All right, coming up, would Jordy Nelson be a good fit here in Seattle? We talked about this a bit. We're going to go around the NFL next with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.